makes an army with a fist raised to the sky. Leading them is a mighty man with a mad rage in his eye. My name is James Connolly, I didn't come here to die, but to fight for the rights of the working class.
Hello comrades, and welcome back to the Plough and Stars podcast, the official podcast of the Party for Reclamation and Survival. The RAS is a revolutionary socialist party primarily based in the settler colonial empire of the so-called United States. I'm one of your hosts, Red Bernard, and I'm joined today by the nice Judeo-Bolshevik. You can find the Plough and Stars on Twitter, at Plough and Stars. You can at us or send us a DM there. Each of us also has a Twitter. Our handles are at Red Bernard or at nice Judeo-Bolshevik. If you enjoy the show and would like to support us, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/ploughandstars. We also have a Redbubble where you can find Plough and Stars and RAS merch at redbubble.com/people/ploughandstars/shop. If you have an interest in the larger party we're affiliated with, you can contact us at reclamation.and.survival@protonmail.com. RAS has an archive.org page set up where you can read various party publications. That site is archive.org/details/@reclaim_survive. Lastly, if you want to support the party overall, you can find our Ko-fi account at ko-fi.com/RASRedAid. In multiple locations across the country, we have comrades out meeting with and feeding the masses and doing the work. Speaking of which, while it is extremely important to learn theory, that means nothing if you are not following through with the work. So we would encourage you to stop this podcast right now, reach out, get involved, and then come back and listen to us. Ramble on. And in particular, we want to say sorry for the hiatus. It's a bit unexpected, but we are back now. We're going to be continuing to bring you content, hopefully at least once a month, as we were before. Yeah, we're happy to be back. I think this is going to be a pretty off-the-cuff episode with just me and what did we decide as a shortened version of your name for
NJB?
NJB.
To all the chosen people out there. Yeah, no, we're busy. Unlike many of your favorite podcasters, all the money from the podcast, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that this podcast rakes in every month. it goes to organizing efforts, not to our bohemian Brooklyn apartments from which we pod from. But yeah, so we're back. We're doing shit. And it's none of your business, but we're going to be doing regular stuff. You listen to my podcast, you don't get to know what I'm doing.
So welcome back, us. I'm glad we're back. So we were thinking today we'll do a pretty off the cuff coverage of because a lot of stuff's been going on in the world, obviously, as anyone living in it well knows. And I think that one of the biggest things that's happened is Ukraine has been invad. I feel like we should at least briefly discuss that. One of the things that came to mind for me was, man, I mean, I was so sure that this is not how this was going to happen.
my surprising thing is how many people have fucking Ukraine flags? My God, like I'm driving around my area for like work and stuff. And it's like people have flags. People have like town specific, like,
yeah, like our tiny little town supports Ukraine. Yeah.
Like, where it's like, Whoville for Ukraine? And it's like, who's printing these? Who's making this money?
Yeah, yeah.
Great time to be a flag salesman, I guess.
Yeah,
kind of wild that they went and did it. Probably would have to another episode.
Yeah, I mean, this might be a subject for a whole other episode. So if you want to hear more about that, then please get in touch. If you want to hear us like actually develop an opinion more robustly and do some research and come back to you with the results of that research, please get in touch and let us know. For now, we'll just yammer on. I think one of the things that was interesting to me was I thought that you know, the war that's been going on there has been going on for, you know, quite a while. You know, obviously Russia's invasion is new, at least into, you know, quote unquote, Ukraine proper, meaning not including Russia's presence in places that declared themselves independent of Ukraine. Obviously, Ukraine considers those places to be like bandit provinces or something like that, and you know, whatever. That's a whole mess to talk about. But I was so sure they were going to just show up at the border, like that Russia was just going to get, like, just walk in and then wait for Ukraine to stop doing what they were doing, as far as like basically just to try and because you know, Russia is also an imperialist country, right? They're also trying to develop their productive forces by invasion in this case. But I was so sure that it was going to be a matter of just putting Russian companies in charge of industry in those provinces. But I don't know.
I mean, my thing is, like you said, the war's been going on since 2014. And it's like, you know, I'm young, of an indeterminate age. But, like, I was in, like, I remember being in middle school and hearing about the Ukraine stuff. And since then, I've, like, had an eye on it. I'm not someone who's going to be like, I'm a Ukraine expert. But like, I try and know my stuff, and it's like, I know you don't give a shit about this because you have not given a shit about it for 8 years. Yeah. And I know that you don't give a shit about like Yemen or Syria or Palestine. And it's very telling that like the first thing that you care about is a bunch of white people, B, that mm-hmm. they're West-backed, C, that they have what I would describe as, at minimum, a semi-fascist government, and C, that, like, it's part of the NATO scheme. That, like,
right, well, NATO's the big one, and also, like, they gotta buy weapons. Like, you know, this is you know, it's not surprising that like in the opening salvo of the Twitter sphere, right? Like on this, I mean, that the opening tweets were from weapons manufacturers, right? Who were so keen to see, well, I mean, obviously they'd be very keen to see NATO deployed. Obviously NATO, I think that that's not realistic, but then again, I also thought that Russia's direct invasion of Ukraine was unrealistic, so what do I know? But certainly, I think that the idea of like, oh yeah, we got to buy more guns, and we got to buy bombs, and whatever, and that's all stuff that will be sold to them from Western arms manufacturers, right? So,
my thought, I mean, I prescribed a belief that the goofiest outcome is the most probable, and I will say, like, everyone in the Western establishment was not really serious about giving Ukraine NATO membership. Like, it's clear that they were just egging them on. I think the goofiest scenario is unfolding of like NATO or countries like Sweden and Finland who want to join NATO will be stopped by Turkey, who is really NATO's frenemy. And that the whole thing will just be a debacle of our good friend, our number one inhabitants of Anatolia, will be goofing this up for their northern NATO neighbors. And I think, mm-hmm. like, I think that's the goofiest outcome, and I think that's probably what's going to happen. I think not to get into like a war nerd mode, but I think a lot of people are making a lot of like, oh, the Russian advance is very slow. And like, oh, blah, 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 this shows that like guerrilla warfare works. This shows that Ukraine like still has a chance. But I think the reality is like, A, you should like know a little bit about Russian warfare. And B, you should also recognize that like not everyone fights wars like Americans. Like Russians can't fight an Iraq war in Ukraine where they just bomb the shit out of everything and then walk in and patrol around until they get shot. Because, like, America can do that in Iraq because Iraq is on the other fucking side of the world. Russia can't do that because Ukraine is right on their front fucking door.
Yeah, and not to mention they're culturally deeply connected, right?
Yeah. So, like, this whole the whole thing of like, oh, they're going slow, whatever. It's like, yeah, like, I'm sorry. A, there's like Russian, you know, military doctrine is different, but also like there, the relationship between Russia and Ukraine is totally different than the relationship that the United States has to any of the dozens of countries that we are involved with militarily, whether that be Iraq or Syria, or like all of West and East Africa, and, you know, probably God knows where else. And that, like, I would agree and say that Russia is a like a low level imperialist power. Yeah, but that doesn't also does not change the fact that as principled revolutionaries living in the imperial core, our position has to be revolutionary defeatism. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, stop the war, and, you know, anything that happens, hope the U.S. and its allies lose. But yeah, that is the position. Like, I'm sorry, that is how it works. That is what we've gotten from the history of socialist revolution in the context of inter-imperialist contestation. Those are just the rules. If you're a Leninist or a communist or someone who just has good vibes, like, I'm sorry, revolutionary defeatism is your position.
Totally. Yeah, there's no like good situation where the U.S. or NATO like deploys forces. Like, that's just terrible for everyone, right? There's no good way for that to go. And I think we all know that, right? I hope our whole audience knows that. If not, get in touch and we will yell at you on Twitter.
Or yell at you in person, depending on how close you are.
Just kidding. Yeah, I'm basically not on Twitter. So.
Meet us in the McDonald's parking lot after this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, that's the whole Ukraine debacle. Next up, I hope all of you have listened to the episode we recorded about supply chains, because they're really not doing good. We're a couple months away from a global grain crisis. We're running up into a global chili crisis. So if you like sriracha or any of the other various chili byproducts, that's going to be a problem for you. Baby formula, tampons, these are all shortages. Obviously, the gas thing. Gas is like above $5 where I live, and I know in other states it's up to like $6 and $7.
Yeah.
Meat is getting more expensive. So, you know, I hate being right. We hate to be right about bad things, but the reality is that, like, supply chains are fucked. And yeah, it is more like I said, you know, a few months ago when we recorded that first episode, like, these things snowball. Like, saying, oh, wow, that's weird that, like, milk is 20 cents more expensive, or that chicken is, like, 10 cents more expensive, that is an indicator of larger issues, because as I said, supply chain issue, like I said, they snowball, and that, you know, these small things have grown into large things, and those issues will continue to compound. And like I said in that episode, it is not something that you should just like watch and be like, damn, that's crazy. There are material things you can do. That even among supply shortages, there's still a lot of capitalist weight. Grocery stores are still throwing out perfectly good food that you can take for yourself, but also that you should be taking to help the masses of people survive. I mean, my God, like, if you have a Panera Bread in your town, they cook fresh bread every day. And if chances are, if you ask for like a donation for mass work or mutual aid, they'll give it to you. So while these supply chain crises worsen, which they are, and they are going to get worse, even if you don't want it to, like, I'm sorry, that's the reality of living in a collapsing empire. There are still avenues where you can utilize this crisis to seize upon the inherent weaknesses of capitalism with regards, with its issues towards overproduction of goods, to create, you know, life-saving survival programs in your area. It is not hard to do. Literally, if you're just handing out bread and, like, you have one book that you read together, that's organizing. And as you start to get more food, start to get a table, start to get pamphlets, start to hold mass meetings, you can, you and your organizing efforts can snowball amidst this crisis. So don't just go like full doomer nihilist. Like, it's bad, but there are immediate things that you can do to help people survive in what is increasingly apparent to be a crisis that is only going to get worsened when Biden raises interest rates to induce a recession, which sort of gets into the next conversation around inflation and labor.
And just before we get there, I also want to flag that some of this stuff is also going to tie into our episode topic for next time that we're getting ready, and we're trying to organize an episode for you guys on organizing mutual aid and Red Aid and that kind of stuff. So look forward to that too. But go on now, for we'll talk about the kind of inflation issue that's imminent, if not ongoing.
It's not looking good, folks. So for a quick explainer, inflation is when there is inflation is when more money is being printed and money becomes worth less.
To be clear, it doesn't have to be only because money is being printed, but in this case, it's going to be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. There's lots of reasons that inflation can happen, but yeah, the money is worth less, which we all can see at the grocery store.
Yeah. So what that means is that, like, wages and savings, that their value is lessened. That if, you know, if the value of a dollar is going down, the purchasing power of the $20 bill that you have is going down. And this is being paired with a supply chain crisis, and pretty soon is going to be compounded by an induced recession. So there's something called the Volcker shock, which you may be hearing about, which basically this guy whose last name was Volcker, during the Carter administration, was the head of the Federal Reserve, and basically in a bid to stop inflation, raised interest rates, and basically that induced a recession to bring savings and spending down. So basically to wipe out people's savings, to discipline labor, and thus to bring inflation down. That is the strategy that the Biden admin is looking to replicate to deal both with the problem of inflation, but also the problem of labor unrest, because people are more willing to engage in organizing when there is a tight labor market, when people need people to hire, when you have more money saved, that the tool of crushing inflation also has the other side of disciplining labor, which, as labor is becoming increasingly militant, is numero uno on the Biden regime's agenda. I don't know, Bernard, do you have thoughts on the subject?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like it's one of those things where, you know, you have like one of the few things that you might say, you know, looking at Biden, right? Like, what does he at least say? He at least looks vaguely pro-union, you might say. But of course, when push comes to shove, you know, we can see that's not what he's actually going in favor of, right? You know, because we have seen some serious like labor action in the last couple of months, in the last year, and I think that that's you know, really put quite a lot of fear in the kind of ruling class, right? I mean, you have Amazon unions. You have, well, I mean, whatever. We've talked about some of these, and there's too many now to list as far as some that have really taken people by surprise. But I think that the thing that is so telling about it is everyone is so eager to blame, like basically whatever COVID relief, right? No matter what country you're in, if the government has done anything to alleviate the suffering of people, it has probably caused some people to decide, you know what, I don't need to put up with my shitty job, and either leave their work or go to something else, right? You know, everyone's very keen to blame that. And I think on some level, it genuinely has given workers a little bit of leeway to actually give a shit about their conditions. So anyway, I think those things are tied together. And I think that's part of why we're seeing this kind of, oh, we need to do something about the economy. We need to do something about labor, right?
Yeah, just because Joe Biden is Irish does not mean he actually cares about labor unions. He just has. I mean, also, I will say Joe Biden is not really Irish. He's like 1/8 Irish, so he is a little bit stealing valor. But yeah, like Brandon does not care about unions, and that's certainly even if he does, his administration does not. And the thing is, the Federal Reserve is like, you know, people are like, oh, you know, the president is hamstrung by Congress, where, you know, Democrats have a majority, and the Senate, where Democrats have a majority. They're like, he's hamstrung by that. He can't do anything. But the Federal Reserve is something that the president can exert more control over. And the monetary policy of the U.S. government, you know, has direct implications for labor. So this is a thing where they are just saying, let it rip, like, just fuck them, because they recognize, they understand the class dynamics and understand that the current moneyed system, you know, whereby people are, you know, have savings and can be a little riskier in their workplace organizing is not good. Because as we are in a period where there's a crisis of capital, and where unionization would even more negatively impact the already declining rate of profit, you know, these struggles take on a really important character for the capitalist class. And because the capitalist class is unified generally with its vanguard figure being the president of the United States, recognize that something has to be done about this. And like, that's just a situation. There's not really anything you can do about it. This sort of ties back to supply chains, just like, start getting food.
I mean, we can also, I mean, I don't know how much it matters, but you know, I mean, it is worth you know, thinking about and talking to people about the idea, you know, because, you know, we're talking about this Volcker shock, right? And it's something that is like, I think I could say it's controversial even among bourgeois economists, right? Like, that this was you know, was this actually worth it or not, right? In terms of trying as a method to address inflation, because it's well known that it is like deeply harmful to normal people.
I mean, there was recently a paper put out, I think, by the World Bank. I don't know, some bourgeois economists that were basically like, the myth of the Volcker shock is the reality of labor discipline, that it was the Volcker shock paired with the labor discipline of the 1970s that allowed them to stabilize the rate of profit. And because labor is not as strong now, I don't know if the Volcker shot will have the same effect. I should also say, when I say there's nothing you can do, like, there are obviously things you can do, but like, you can't stop the government from doing that. The question is only like, yeah, how are you going to talk to your coworkers and your neighbors and your family members of saying, like, why is this happening? Something that is, you know, transparently evil, of like artificially inducing a recession.
And it's important to make clear that that's what we're talking about here, right? Like, that's the point. So when it comes about, you know, I mean, on some level, it's almost inoculating people to it. I mean, not inoculating people to the thing itself, which I guess maybe you are if you're warning them to, like, you know, whatever, buy up foodstuffs now or whatever. I don't know, but
get your money in gold, folks.
What's that?
I said, get your money in gold.
Yes, get your money in gold. That's right. That's what we're saying here on the Plow and Stars podcast.
Invested in gold, invested in Bitcoin, printed out.
Yeah, Ethereum, NFTs, for sure. Get in that.
Yeah, keep it under your mattress. Bury it in your backyard.
No, but yeah, I think it's important to think about, you know, in part, like, okay, we're seeing this inflation. It's very easy for, because a lot of things that are good for workers, right, like stimulus checks and minimum wage, workplace safety, it's all, like, theoretically inflationary in the bourgeois economic model. And so that's what it's going to be. It's going to be, oh, well, we've had the good times and now we have to trim the fat or whatever. And if you're talking with people about this, you know, people who don't necessarily engage with these ideas a lot, it can be very useful to say, they're going to say X, Y, Z. This is why that's nonsense. It can be really, really helpful, just in terms of developing people into really good comrades.
I mean, the line that you're hearing from the Brandon regime sitting in Washington is that, oh yeah, everything's just getting more expensive because of Russia. And it's like, wow, I didn't know Vladimir Putin was in charge of the American Federal Reserve. That seems like a pretty big threat to national security. Like you said, like, this is something that is, you know, slowly happening. And I think with the same purpose of the supply chains episode is you can go to the people in your life and say, watch this space. Like, the supply chains crisis is now, like, really out and about, but the inflation crisis and the recession are still sort of on the horizon. And I would say that, like, inoculating people to the propaganda points of the Biden regime is important because, you know, the state wants you to think that other people are responsible for what they are doing.
Right. And you want to make sure that people know, like, when they wring their hands and say, oh no, there's nothing we can do about this or whatever, or we have to do this, right? Like, you need to know the answer to that is absolutely untrue, right? That is not true. This is, like, being done on purpose for reasons that are related to class, right? I mean, this is part of the class struggle. And it's like, you know, when you're inoculated to it, then when it eventually happens and you can see it for, like, the kind of naked class warfare that it is, right? Okay, well, let's carry on then. One of the other things we wanted to talk about, there have been a number of school shootings, obviously. Well, mass shootings in general.
And we're recording on the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting, which I think we, the party put out a post, but I mean, all of these events are tragedies. Like, these are, the murder of any innocent person, and the murder of any person is a tragedy, but it is also something uniquely fascistly American. That, like, people are saying, oh, the issue is guns, but, like, there are other countries that have guns. The issue is with American white supremacy. The reality is that you cannot curb these shootings and you cannot stop these shootings until you uproot, root and stem the fascist culture that creates them. Anyone who says, oh, this is not us, is lying. This is a country built on the enslavement of Africans and the murder of indigenous people. Every town and proletarian women and gender marginalized people and immigrants, that, like, every town and every spot on America is a site of an ongoing massacre. And that to expect this culture and this economy to produce anything other than totally abhorrent, wanton violence is unrealistic. That the only way to abolish this is to abolish white supremacy. And we need to be extremely clear in saying that also saying that the police are not the answer to this, as the police are the generators and the sustainers of fascist violence, that the police in every circumstance are unwilling or unable or accomplices to these shootings. It's not a coincidence that almost every single shooting, the shooter was known to the FBI, or that the police chose not to intervene, or if the police do intervene, like in Uvalde, they're arresting parents trying to see their children and, you know, trying to stop people from saving their kids after they already went in and saved theirs. And I will go further to say that they probably shot a kid. This may not, like, it may come out this is not true, but I'm calling it now. The suspicious behavior that they are showcasing of not cooperating with the school board, not cooperating with anyone, refusing to release body cam footage of the shooting, changing the details of the shooting, having different details than other agencies, including the state police, there being an inordinate amount of shells at the shooting. Like, I'm going to call it, if I'm wrong, you know, sue me, but like, they made it worse.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not, like, in any just society, and if they had any sense of honor, they would, like, put rocks in their pockets and walk into a lake like a disgraced Confucian monk.
It is, I mean, it's so disturbing, really. I mean, and you know, even if, I don't know about the, I hope it's not true, I hope they didn't shoot a child. And even if they didn't, though, I mean, I think that it is actually, like, it's important that people kind of see, you know, I think that it's pretty clear from the Uvalde shooting that the police are not the answer, right? And you obviously also see the police wanting to be the answer, right? They want to see, you know, you see school boards are, you know, trying to get police into the schools and whatever. I mean, it's you know, and that's stuff that, frankly, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about how, you know, electoral politics are not the answer to your problems. And you know, it's not. But when it comes to local, especially school board stuff, that's something you can make a difference to. I mean, if you show up to a meeting and ideally get other people too, right? Be organized, get other people in your community involved. But that is something you can make a difference to. You can show up to those meetings and be mad as hell. And I think the Uvalde situation is a perfect example to point to say, look, we don't, like, police are not going to solve this problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say, like, to do the Lenin line, like, not doing electoralism doesn't mean you totally disengage from electoral politics or electoral bodies. It means that you have to specifically, strategically utilize them as a site to build class consciousness. If you are going to your local school board hearings and accumulating people and using it as a soapbox to educate the people who are there and to galvanize the masses of people as to the horrifying realities of police militarization in schools, which, like, school police have not stopped a single mass shooting. All they do is terrorize colonized and gender marginalized students, point blank, period. That is a fact. And you should be you need to go to the masses of people, and you need to, like, talk and have education on these lines, because the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, if they're, like, if people are shooting up schools, we need people who can shoot back. And I think educating people as to why that is not true, based on, you know, on all the data we have, is so important. And I sort of get onto the last horrifying bit, but the slew of transphobic and homophobic laws and the possible repeal of Roe v. Wade, just horrific. Like, it is the face of American fascism laid bare. And I think that, like, the culture that produces school shooters, that is the culture of these guys. That, like, the fact that these two things are happening simultaneously is not a coincidence. It is, in fact, the correlation. And that, like this, I'd say it requires a militancy.
Yeah. And I think, like, one of the things to kind of, like, point out about this is that you like, people talk about abortion as though it is, like, a controversial subject or something like that. And it just isn't. Like, it never has been. You know, since they started polling on this kind of thing in the 60s, it's been a matter of at least 60% of people saying that abortion should be available in all or most cases, right? It's always been a fight about ideology, and not one that working people give a shit about, right? In general, right? Obviously, you have your Uncle Frank or whatever who is who may well be a working class person and maybe extremely reactionary, but when it comes down to it, I mean, this is, like, absolutely unashamedly about control of women. Well, non-men in general, especially when it comes to, because, you know, we have there's so much going on as far as both transphobic and homophobic legislation that we're all very concerned about. And it doesn't just come down to like the particular issue being legislated. It's always going to be much broader, because, as we talked about, we're in a context of a deeply misogynistic culture. And in that context, everything that we talk about, everything that the government does is to reinforce that misogyny when it comes to changes in this direction. It's really disturbing.
Yeah. And just to speak as a trans feminine person, like, it's scary. Like, I'm scared. Like, not to get too emotional on the pod, but, like, it fucking sucks and it's scary and it's all it is emboldening people. Like, after a pride celebration, I had a bunch of, like, local guys, like, throw ice cream cones at me and call me slurs. Like, this is, like, again, like, this is part and parcel of American fascist society. And this is also something that requires action, which is obviously go to the rallies, talk to the masses, but, like, this requires militant action. You can take that to mean whatever you want. All I can say is that it is right to rebel, and you better dare to struggle and dare to win, because if you don't dare to struggle, you damn well don't deserve to win. And that the protection of gender marginalized and sexually marginalized people is only going to become more important. And you need to be talking to people in your community about resisting that, because the stakes are only getting higher. I know the Supreme Court just had a ruling that any federal agency can no knock without a warrant anyone's house that's within 100 miles of a border, which also includes airports, which encompasses about 70% of people who live in the continental United States. Which I hate to end on a fucking bummer, but, like, sorry.
It's tough.
And frankly, the answer is, like, if you've been putting off joining an organization, starting an organization, or specifically joining our organization, like, now's the time to fucking join, bud.
Yeah.
It is far easier to get through these things together. This party takes security seriously. And if you're going to join any org, it should be this one. And if we're not there for you to join, we can connect you to good people that you can link up with.
Yeah.
Because the reality with whether it's, you know, supply chain crises, the war in Ukraine, inflation and labor, mass shootings, or transphobic, homophobic laws, these are not exceptions to the rule. This is the reality of living in a collapsing fascist empire.
Yeah.
And it is, for the most marginalized people, it is already, like, nearing a terminal crisis where, like, our lives are being threatened, which they already are threatened and have been threatened. And in fact, the foundation of the United States is based on the violence against marginalized people, either on the basis of their status of indigeneity, skin color, sexuality, or gender. But like, it's time to get organized, because whether it's abortion or gender expression, like, marginalized communities need to be willing to stand up. You can take that to mean whatever you want. But as the Red Brigades in Italy said, adventurism is confronting the armed bourgeois state with an inadequate weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get organized.
Get organized and get militant, because the right is getting militant, and they're only emboldened by this stuff. And they're only going to be more emboldened, probably realistically speaking, when Trump runs for president again and possibly wins. And coming to terms with that reality and the reality of things getting worse, there's no better time for organization, because it is always the time to seize the time. And to wait is to accept death. And that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. All right. I can't follow that up, so I think we can call it there. I mean, get organized, get involved. Let's go. Yeah. I mean, sorry to bum you out, but hopefully...
Let's go, Brandon.
So we'll get you real bummed out, and then give you a little sarcasm and a push towards getting organized. You know, get involved. Please reach out to us if you need any help with that. And you know, like, it doesn't have to be us. If you know people, if you have acquaintances, you have friends who are organizing, obviously we would encourage you to do that too. But if you need help, please give us a call. Not literally a call. How old am I? An old man. Give me a call.
And look forward to our next episode, which should be coming out in a few days, about how to start Red Aid, Mutual Aid, Max Work, the role of Red Aid, Mutual Aid, and Max Work in party building, and how you can get started and get organized. We don't just want to tell you to get organized. We want to teach you, and we want to point you towards our organization.
Absolutely. All right, so I think we'll call it there. Solidarity forever.
Solidarity. We'll be right back.
Who win it now?